Donegal here with you. 202 on the fan. I'm watching the highlights right now again on ESPN. I guess that's the highlights of Embiid pulling Mitchell Robinson down to the ground. And that was just the beginning of my night. Because listen, obviously a lot went on last night, and we'll get to it all. And honestly, I'm not that excited about any of it. And we'll start with Philadelphia as we take your phone calls at 877-337-6666. We'll start with the Knicks and the Sixers, game three. And the series is now 2-1 as Philadelphia pulls away in the third quarter, wins 125-114. It was closer than that final score might indicate. And obviously a huge third quarter from Philadelphia. They hit, I don't know, what was it, 375 threes? They just shot the lights out. They were on, was it, 9 of 12? Embiid hits 4 three-pointers in the game. 4 three-pointers in the game. 5 in the game, excuse me. 4 in that third quarter. Has an incredible performance. And we talked about, or at least I talked, I think everyone talked about, after game one, watching how he was moving around and tweaking the knee in the second half of that game, or the second quarter of that game. And you were wondering if you were ever going to get a performance like that from Embiid again. And then game two, there he is again. And he's been great, and he's been hobbled, but yet still giving you good offensive performances and 33 points in game two. And yet the Knicks have still been able to overcome the fact that Maxey and Embiid have been the two best players on the court and taking a 2-0 lead heading to Philadelphia. And after the game, after game two, Embiid makes the guarantee of sorts that they're going to win this series. They're the better team. And he comes out and he gives a great performance. But I talked about how mentally soft I believe Philadelphia was. I talked about all the excuse making from Philadelphia, from the head coach to the superstar Embiid, and how mentally soft I thought they were. And they come out in game three, and Embiid in particular. And I understand he put on a virtuoso performance. He scores 50 points on one leg. I get it. I get his knee is in shambles, and he's hobbling up and down the court. And it's amazing to watch him do what he did and shoot the three-pointer in that stretch. But let me tell you something about what mentally soft people do. People who are desperate, people who are soft, start to attack. And I understand, I remember, because I'm harkening back to a caller who said, well, after the calls at the end of game two, well, if this happened in Philadelphia, if this happened against the Knicks, you would be singing a different story. You'd be complaining much like Philadelphia is. Well, here we are. And yeah, I'm complaining because Embiid is ridiculously dirty. There's no other way to put it. He's putting knees in crotches, and he's pulling down players from their legs as they're going up for layups. Pulling down, I mean, just flat out, that was a hissy fit on the floor because he got bumped to the ground, and he brings down Mitchell Robinson. And over the course of the beginning of this game, we saw 5 separate stoppages. We saw how many freaking replays. We saw how many questionable fouls, and whether or not it's a flagrant one or a flagrant two. Well, let me ask you something. How is that not a flagrant two? And I understand they're in Philadelphia. I understand he's a superstar, and I'm not expecting him to get thrown out of the game. I understand he's probably not going to. I knew it when I watched it. I knew he should have. And we can play all the what-if games. I can't stand the whataboutism that sometimes goes on here. Well, what about if that was this person? Or what about if that was that person? Or what about if that? We understand. We understand there's different rules for superstars, and we understand that Embiid at home is not going to get thrown out of that game, and so does Embiid. And whether it's putting his knee in the crotch of Hartenstein or whether it's pulling down Mitchell Robinson in an absolute blatant flagrant two. And we know that's what it is. And the answers after the game on why it wasn't a flagrant two, well, we didn't think it reached the heights of a flagrant two. What does? Because when you look at the rule book, seems to me like pulling a player down while you're on the floor with the express interest in doing one thing. That is not a play. That is not going for the ball. That is not trying to defend. That's from your ass saying, I'm pulling you down with me. And now Mitchell Robinson gets hurt later in the game, leaves the game in a boot. The one player who defended Embiid over the course of the series, the one player who slowed him down at all. And I understand, listen, Embiid was incredible in this game. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Embiid puts up 50. He hits 5 out of 7 three-pointers. And ultimately, I think a lot of this crap was predicated on the complaining of the first two games. They get to the foul line. At a much higher clip than the New York Knicks. They take 33 foul shots. The Knicks take 19. Embiid alone takes 21. And we could talk about the role players, and that's the difference in a lot of these games that we talked about too. You're going to have guys who played much better. And obviously, big time, Oubre was better in this game. Payne hit a bunch of, barely played in games 1 and 2, hits a bunch of three-pointers in that third quarter where they pulled away that were just daggers. And they played better all around, and it was close at times. And that third quarter, they just shot the lights out. And so the positive angle from this as a Knicks fan is, hey, it took a 50-point performance. There's several positives if you want to look forward to this series. And I think you could take a lot of them out, and I think the Knicks are the better team, and I still feel like they're going to win this series. And if you take the positives out, it's that Brunson did find his game offensively, scoring 39 points last night. He looked much better. The offense overall found their stride a little bit, put up 114 and looked better. It took a 50-point performance from Embiid on one leg, shooting 5 of 7 from three-point land, four in a row to start that third quarter. All the role players and an incredible barrage of three-point shots in that third quarter to beat them. That's what it took to beat the Knicks. You feel better about the way Brunson's playing, and it took a three-point barrage where the ball hardly missed. The ball hardly hit the rim, and Embiid scored 50. And Embiid had to come out there and be an unbelievable dirty player. And that's what's going to come out from this series. And I'm sorry. You want to call this sour grapes? It's whatever it is. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And then what makes me laugh is in the post game, Nick Nurse, the head coach of Philadelphia, who was all over the video on how many timeouts he called. And how often he called timeouts or the fouls on the inbounds. They're all over it. And in the post game, when asked if he was concerned if Embiid pulling down Mitchell Robinson from his backside, pulling down Mitchell Robinson would reach a flagrant 2, he said, well, to be honest, I didn't look at it. Oh, he didn't look at it. This is now a series. And nobody expected it to be easy. And nobody expected a sweep. And Philadelphia was bound to win a game. And Embiid and Maxey have been the two best players in this series. We talked about all of this. But the bad blood now in this series and the way that game was played and the different flagrants early on in this game where they're stopping and watching videotape, whether it's DiVincenzo getting slapped in the face going to the basket, getting cut on his eye, whether it's the knee to Hartenstein, right in the junk, or whether it's, I don't know how else to put it. And I do hate to play the whataboutism game, but if Mitchell Robinson brings down Embiid, he's out of the game. You can't just grab a player by the legs while you're on the floor and drag him down while he's up in the air. It's laughable. And to me, that is a further sign of this Philadelphia team clutching at straws. And they were allowed to get away with it. They caught a break there. They caught a break on the knee on the offensive foul. And that's fine. The Knicks caught a break at the end of that game the other night with the tugging on the jersey. So you want to talk about catching breaks, fine. But this Sixers team, and Embiid in particular, shouldn't have been on the court to allow a 50-point performance. But, hey, he backed up his declaration. He talked about who the better team was. And he went out there and scored 50 points on a game he guaranteed, in a series he guaranteed. So bravo to him, that dirty son of a gun. And honestly, I think, and we'll see how Tibbs reacts to it. And the Knicks haven't gone out there and made excuses like Philadelphia. But we're going to see how the Knicks react to this. And we're going to see how Tibbs comes back. And let's be fair. The biggest concern now is whether Mitchell Robinson is going to be able to play in game four and if not the rest of the series. Because he's been the one player who's been able to defend Embiid at all. And to have him leaving a boot after being dragged, and I know that wasn't on the same play, but it could have easily been the beginnings of his ankle injury. And Philadelphia, who was so concerned with what went on at the end of the game, suddenly has nothing to say, didn't see the video, nothing to say about some of the dirtiest plays you will ever see on a basketball court. And now, it's on. The series is 2-1. They have a couple of days off. And they will get back at it on Sunday. And the Knicks will try and reestablish the strength of this series, and Philadelphia would try and tie it after a tough game to watch. A close game, a bunch of nonsense early on. There is no excuse why. I mean, that is some of the, that's the dirt. I mean, to just grab at the legs of a player up in the air and bring him down, that's as dirty as it gets. And I love DiVincenzo getting in his face. I mean, DiVincenzo showed zero fear getting in Embiid's face. That was awesome. But give it to Philadelphia. Because I never expected him to get thrown into that game. And I wasn't sure he could have a 50-point performance. And on that knee, I wasn't sure he was capable of it. But he makes the guarantee. He goes out there and he scores 50 points and they hit a barrage of three-pointers in that third quarter to pull away. Every other quarter, the Knicks outscored. The Knicks outscored him in the first two quarters, outscored him in the fourth. But that third quarter was the difference in the game. And ultimately, moving forward, I still feel damn good about this Knicks team. Brunson found his game, and it took a 50-point performance from a player on one leg that I don't know if he can duplicate. And a barrage of three-pointers that I can't imagine. I mean, they didn't miss in that third quarter. And we'll get ready for game four on Sunday. 877-337-6666. So I'm a little pissed off about that. And then you get to the draft. And I wouldn't say I'm pissed off. I'm just not as excited as so many Giant fans are in particular. We'll get to the Jets in a second and their pick. But obviously the Giants have the sixth overall pick. We've been talking about it. J.J. McCarthy's doing interviews. He expects to be picked. On and on about they're going to try and get this quarterback. They're attached to that quarterback. And come the moment, they don't take him. And here's my point. I understand, and I've said this, and I'm okay with it. I believe in Shane and Dable, and I didn't want them to reach for a quarterback necessarily, right? I was firm with that. Everybody who listens to the show, yes, I've been a proponent for getting a quarterback. I want the next quarterback, namely because I no longer believe in Daniel Jones. So to watch the draft kind of go ho-hum to start this draft, no trading up, and I do believe the New York Giants tried to move heaven and earth to go draft Drake May. I believe they wanted to trade into that top three desperately and did everything they could. And the Patriots just weren't having it. They wanted to draft May. They did. And that was the only quarterback the Giants had belief in. That's the only quarterback the Giants want. So in that vein, I understand the pick. And having J.J. McCarthy there, who up until 3 weeks ago, I never thought would even be considered drafted in the top 10, let alone six with the New York Giants. Never considered it. Wasn't sure he was going to be a first-round pick. This was never about, oh, my God, you got to go get J.J. McCarthy. For me, the New York Giants are not a serious contending football team with Daniel Jones moving forward. So, yes, Neighbors is an explosive player. Neighbors is the best wide receiver they've had since Odell Beckham Jr. It's something that they've been sorely lacking, something they've been desperate for, an important position. I like the player. But I can't get so excited as so many Giant fans are. I understand not taking the quarterback, and ultimately you don't reach for a quarterback you don't believe in. So ultimately, this is the pick. But it's okay. Explain to me how a stud wide receiver impacts this team. Because I got to be honest with you, heading into the season with Daniel Jones coming off a blown out knee, coming off another neck injury, the same one that cost him season-ending surgery 2 years ago, an offensive line that hopefully they can revamp, but a guy who is still, to me, unable to read defenses, doesn't help his offensive line at all. His best weapon has been his legs, and now that's hampered by every time he gets hit, worried about his neck plus his knee. I just no longer believe in Daniel Jones. And if you're going to look at this team moving forward, and you're going to tell me Daniel Jones is the guy, which, by the way, I still firmly believe this is not a validation of how the Giants feel about Daniel Jones. This is the proof of how they felt about every other quarterback in this draft not named either Williams, Daniels, or May. Because I think they still wanted to get that quarterback. It just wasn't the guy they believed in. But moving forward, here's my problem. I don't believe in Daniel Jones. I think Washington just got a better quarterback in the draft. You are looking at an NFC East where the Giants have the worst quarterback in the draft. A team that needs a million different things, that has a million different holes. They just added a wide receiver, a position that, yes, they've been desperate for, and you can tell me how bad they are at this position over and over again, but it's a position Daniel Jones has been unable to make anyone better at any level, and the backup quarterbacks come in and do a better job of making wide receivers look good. And you could be heading into a season, year three, of this GM and coach, have it be a failure. Because of all the holes, because of the possibility of Daniel Jones being unable to stay healthy, and be moving on from Shane and Dable, heading into a new coach that I don't know if he's capable of developing a quarterback and being in the position of needing one next year. Sure, hey, listen, Chris, there's next year. They can get a quarterback next year. Sure they can. Will they have Brian Dable there to develop them? I don't know, because if they win five games next year, which is on the table, explain to me how we know that Shane and Dable are going to be there. So while I understand the pick, I don't hate the pick. I'd rather have this than force a quarterback, fine. But excuse me if I'm not going to jump up and down that they drafted a very talented wide receiver when they still don't have a quarterback. So yay. They got a very talented wide receiver. I'm very excited about it. It doesn't help this team win. It doesn't put them in a much better position than it did. I don't know how much better they are. I just don't know how much better this draft pick made them. And when you're drafting sixth overall, I'd like to take someone where I really feel like it makes them better. And while the kid is talented, no doubt, and maybe when they do get that quarterback, everything will come together. But until they do, until I know the future of this team has a quarterback I can believe in moving forward, everything is just eh. So eh. Hopefully they're not wrong with J.J. McCarthy, because if they are, if we're watching Daniel Jones get hurt, we're watching Daniel Jones take bad sacks, and J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix, who's the talk of the draft, and we'll get into all the other variations and moves of this NFL draft. If we're talking about Michael Penix or Bo Nix with Denver, or, you know, obviously J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota, if any of those guys hit and we're looking for another quarterback next year because Daniel Jones does what Daniel Jones does, which is either get hurt or lose, and it costs this GM and this head coach their jobs, well, I hope they hire another good coach who could develop a quarterback and made his name creating a superstar in Buffalo, because I don't know where they go from here. So, yes, they didn't reach for a bad quarterback. Okay, great. Yes, they got one hell of a talented wide receiver. Yeah, great. 877-337-6666. We'll get to the Jets as well, who trade back and get an offensive lineman, which is another one for me. Yeah, okay, great. I'm not enthused about anything, and maybe it's because of the way the Knick game went, but I just found it hard to get excited. Even if this is the right move, even if these are the players that made the most sense, even if that's what they should have drafted, I'm sorry, there was just no excitement level for me on either of them. I'm trying to make sure that Aaron Rodgers gets a bunch of touchdowns this year, and I drafted an offensive lineman who might not play, and I understand that there might be injuries, and you have to make sure the offensive line is good, and I will understand all of it, but here's what I know. There was options there to have players who can score touchdowns, who will play, who I know when things are at their best, if everyone is healthy, can go in there and impact the game. Because right now, if everything goes great, they just drafted someone who won't hit the field. So I'm less enthused about it than most people are.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
3-2, swung on, a pop foul back here.
Ow! Ow!
Really hit me. I didn't know it was coming back that far.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 229. Nick Monagle here with you. So now I'm sulking a little bit, and I'm annoyed at everything. Last night just annoyed me. I'm sorry, I'm just annoyed at the whole thing, and it started with the Knicks. And listen, I didn't think they'd sweep. I don't think anybody thought they would sweep. I still feel like they're in control of the series. I still think they're the better team overall. I don't expect a barrage like that of raining down threes like we saw in the third quarter. And I don't know if Embiid, now he keeps proving me wrong, but I don't know if Embiid's capable of 50. But what he pulled on the court is just absolute nonsense. I don't know how else. I mean, it's just absolute garbage, and he should have been thrown out of the game. I never thought he would be. I don't expect him to be. But letter of the law, and I hate to play whataboutism, but we know if it was the other way around, Mitchell Robinson is getting tossed. Can you imagine if Mitchell Robinson pulls down Embiid and Embiid lays on the floor holding his knee for 30 seconds? He's gone. He's gone. Mitchell Robinson's in the air getting pulled down by a player at his ankles. It's unacceptable. It is absolutely dirty. There's no other way to put it. Now, he put on one hell of a performance. You can't knock it how well he played. But absolute garbage. And then from the head coach, and this pissed me off when I saw it. This audio I'm about to play pissed me off when I saw it, because Nick Nurse went out of his way to bitch and complain about not getting a timeout in an instant where he didn't call timeout. I went back and watched the footage just to be sure. I went back, I watched it multiple times. I call timeout here, I try to call timeout there. So he goes back and he watches a whole bunch of film when the 76ers get screwed. But when asked if he was worried about Embiid's, you know, pulling down non-basketball play with only the intent to injure, pulling down Mitchell Robinson, when he was asked if he was concerned that would be upgraded to a flagrant two, which would mean an ejection for his star Embiid, this was his response.
You thought the flagrant at the beginning. I mean, were you a little worried that it could have been like a flagrant two, and that way didn't ever cross your mind at all?
I didn't even look at it. Sorry. I didn't see it.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it. Why would he bother to look at that? No need to look at it. I don't think any of us needed to look at it. We knew. I'm taking this back. He's right. There was no need to look at it. It should have been a flagrant too. I mean, it's just, I don't know if I've, I mean, it's just, especially at the ankles of a big man like that. To be down there on the ground and, you know, Ananobi just by force and, you know, going for the ball, puts a shoulder into him and knocks him down on the ground. And while he's on the ground, he's pulling down players. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. That was such a dirty play, man. I'm watching LeBron in the postgame. I wonder if LeBron has any comments on that play. Did you get a chance to catch that one, LeBron? What you thought of it? And again, I'm allowed to make the complaints. I know we were getting on Philadelphia for complaining. The Knicks aren't complaining. As far as I know, I had to get in the car and drive here. I didn't see any Knicks making a big complaint about it or saying it cost them the game or saying, I'm sure there are shots at the refs. That's always. Unbelievable. But we set up now it's a series. Now it's a series. And they're going to have to figure out a way to stop and beat. I mean, we have to figure it out. And his ability to hit, especially at the top of the key, you can't give him space there. You can't give him space there. I know Mitchell Robinson was the best defender they had for him. They're going to have to figure something out. I mean, you can't let him get to the free throw line 21 times. He hit 19 of 21. You can't let him get to the free throw 21 times. You can't let him shoot an open three, especially at the top of the key. He's deadly from there. You know, even from like the three from the elbows, he kind of was, you know, he hit a couple of those too. But the top of the key, that's a shot he's looking for. That's a 7-2 center on one leg looking for a top of the key three-pointer. And hitting them at 5 out of 7. And 4 in that third quarter. They're going to have to figure out a way to slow him down. But at least Brunson got back into the game. Brunson scores 39, 3 for 7 from 3, 13 of 27 from the field, and he gets to the foul line 12 times, hits 10 of them. But this game early on was an absolute you-know-what show with all the different reviews, all the different flagrant fouls, and honestly, Embiid should probably not have been on the court to get 50 points. And now, moving forward, what's the adjustment? Because we know how tough the Knicks are and how resilient the Knicks are. And you don't want to get bogged down in it, and you don't want to be the one who retaliates and gets the flagrant two and gets someone ejected from the game. You want to play your game and focus on you. But on some level, you can't let Embiid, who was a wild man out there, let's be honest, Embiid was also just out of control. Whether it's the knee to Hartenstein, just kind of, you know, on that knee, he's almost just like all over the place. He has struggled keeping control of his body. But there's got to be some sort of physical nature response from the Knicks, because in Philadelphia, this is going to continue. The other story is the crowd in this game. I'm watching a million things. I didn't even mention the Islanders, who obviously fall down in game 3 as well. And are now down 0-3 in the series. But I'm keeping an eye on that. We're obviously watching the draft. I'm trying to get all the commentary. I'm waiting for the Giants to trade up to 3. But you could hear the crowd. A lot of Knicks fans in Philadelphia. A lot of Knicks fans. 877-337-6666. All right, let's get to the calls. You guys are all lined up in a pretty little row. Phil and Kearney. What's up, Phil?
Hey, C-Mac, how you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good, man. Been listening to you for a long time on the afternoon ride, and just glad that you got your own show.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate that.
So, I have NFL draft, but the first one's with the Knicks and everything. I'm a Nets fan, so I don't matter anyway. Is there any way they can try to go for, like, a maybe, like, to start off the game to try to get him to get Embiid to foul. Maybe put like a Hartenstein, Mitchell Robinson, 4 or 5.
Yeah. Say that to me one more time. I'm sorry.
Like if they were to do a starting five,
yeah,
would it be possible for Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein as like the four five? You get Hartenstein's offense with Mitchell Robinson's defense.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do that, right? I don't know if you want to do that to your offense because, you know, now you're talking about two guys who don't help with spacing, two guys who can't shoot. I understand it's to slow Embiid down, and maybe there can be times with that. I wouldn't do it at the starting five. If they have a lead or Embiid's killing them for a particular moment or, you know, and Maxey's off the floor or, you know, something like that, and you want to try and get in there and figure out a way to just slow Embiid down defensively, it's not... I think you could throw Ananobi at him with Mitchell Robinson or with Hartenstein. There's other ways to do it as opposed to putting two guys on the floor who really can't help you offensively. Although, you know, although Hartenstein's been hitting those floaters, 7 of 12 from the floor, and he was playing well in this game, but offensively at least. But no, I don't love that idea. I don't love that idea. You got to try and stop him. I get it, but having those two guys on the floor probably do too much detriment to your offense as opposed to slowing down Embiid.
And then for the draft questions, I mean, I personally like Malik Nabers. I wish the Jets probably would have traded up a little bit.
And they tried to. They tried to trade up for Odunza.
And so, but for the Jets-wise, was Bashanu like the better choice, or was the guy from was Oregon State? What was his name? The Hawaiian, the Polynesian, or...
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, I think they took the best tackle available. I do think they took the best. I think they did take the best tackle available. But again, it's not that I don't think it's a good pick or that I don't think he's a good player. Like, obviously, and they need the position on some level, but I'm so focused, and maybe it's, you know, I'm just so laser focused on getting the most out of this team. That when I look at an offensive lineman, and Olu is, I think he is probably, you know, it was him and Alt for me is the two best tackles in this draft, and he's still there. They trade back, which is, you know, they get a couple of picks and move back one slot and take the same player they would have taken. So, I mean, how can you not at least like that aspect of it? And I know the point will be how many games can you expect Smith to play, right? He's played a full season since what, 2018? So he's missed games in every year over the last 5 years. So it's probably pie in the sky to think you're going to be able to get through an entire season with Tyron Smith playing the entire year. Now, I think you can live without him for a few weeks or whatever as long as you have him for the playoffs. And I'm trying to just... I want to make the team as good as it can be. So if everyone's healthy and everybody's playing, I don't know how this pick doesn't impact them that much. But you have to protect your 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles heel. You do have offensive linemen with injury history. And this guy can not only, you know, obviously it's a one-year deal for these guys. He's a stud moving forward. You fix your offensive line. It's not a bad pick. It just doesn't excite me. I would have rather have taken a weapon. And they tried to trade up for Odunze. They did. They tried to move up. And we're seeing now that, you know, Atlanta didn't want to move. They were looking to take a quarterback, which makes no freaking sense to me. There were none of the trades. We talked about Arizona. How much did we talk about, you know, Arizona trading out of four? They didn't want to trade out of four. The Chargers didn't want to pass up on Alt. And then once it got to the Bears, I mean, if you look at the Bears now, that you've obviously got Williams. I mean, has there been a better situation just as far as weapons for a rookie quarterback especially a top overall pick? When's the last time a top overall pick walks in to a team with this many offensive weapons? I mean, look at the wide receiving core he's throwing. He's going to be able to throw to. You're going to have Odunze. You're going to have... obviously, geez, I'm losing my Keenan Allen and more. You'd have more Keenan Allen. And, I mean, that's not bad. Plus a defense that really, and Cole Kmet tight end, that's right. You can have Kmet tight end, and a defense that traded for Sweat last year, and from that moment on, was one of the better defenses in the NFL. I can't think of a quarterback that's a rookie quarterback that's headed into a situation with this much talent around him. I mean, I think it's a really good spot, especially a top pick. I'm sure, like, you know, obviously later picks have had probably the opportunity.
Beats what David Carr walked into with the Texans.
It beats what David Carr walked into with the Texans, no doubt.
Or any Jet and Giant quarterback first round pick in a long time.
Forever, yes. Matt in Long Island, what's up, Matt?
Hey, Chris. Thanks
what's up?
Myself. How are you?
You got it, buddy.
Listen, I want to talk about Knicks. Tough game Philly tonight. I mean, I see Brunson going, but right now there's just no answer for Embiid. Like, them and him and Maxey are getting 70 points a game,
yep,
average combined.
Yep.
And right now I feel like there's no answer because no matter what you throw at him, he's going to get called the Knicks in foul trouble. He's going to go to the line. You yep. can't guard him the perimeter. And Tom Thibodeau's got to switch some system up because I feel like the Knicks are leading the series, but it feels like the Sixers have the advantage right now.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel that way. There definitely was a couple of games that, like this was of all the games, this was the one that clearly was, you know, one, I wouldn't say one-sided. The Knicks never really had a chance to win this game after the third quarter, where the other two games, you could say the Sixers had a chance to win both games one and two and didn't. But I still think go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I see your point, but I say we know what we're going to get from Matthew and Beast in the rest of the series. I mean, we know Brunson could be that guy.
I don't know.
No number two.
I don't know what you. I don't think you know for a fact what you're going to get from Embiid the rest of the series. I understand what you're saying. I just don't know. Over the course of seven games, can that knee? And I know he's got a couple of days off. There's some timing in this series that I wish weren't the case. But like, is he going to be able to do this the entire series with that knee? I don't know. We'll see.
I mean,
right now, at least Brunson's kind of woken up a little bit, scoring 39 points. If Brunson can score, because if you look at it, I mean, this game is right there until they go absolutely nuts with three-pointers in the third quarter. I mean, they shoot 9 of 10, 9 of 12, excuse me, and he's 4 for 4. I understand how good he is, but I just can't imagine. I mean, it took a barrage of three-pointers. It took him getting 50 just to beat the Knicks, like, at home. I still feel like this is an even series that I still like the Knicks in it. I don't feel like this is somehow turn the tables that performance last night.
I agree with that. I mean, listen, it's just like, you know, when it's just going to be like, it's so hard to guard him that you're going to draw a foul. We saw Hardenstein getting foul trouble, the two fouls right away. I mean, Embiid did a dirty play in the drop.
No, he's so tall. If you get too close to him, he leans in and gets a foul.
Yeah.
If you're not Hardenstein or Mitchell Robinson, he just shoots it over you. Like, if he's hitting threes, he's extremely dangerous. If he's going to shoot 5 of 7 from 3-point line, I mean, he's a 7'2 guy who gets into the paint and has moves and can score. And he can shoot 5 of 7 from 3. And if you get too close to him to try and stop him, he leans in and gets a foul, as we saw against Hartenstein. It gets him to the foul line. And he's an incredible foul shot. He's an incredible foul shooter. I mean, he shot, I just had the box score. I think he shot, it was like 19 for 22 or something. Like, you can't put him at the line. He's deadly. It's hard to body him up. And he can shoot three-pointers. There's no doubt he's a dangerous player. There's no doubt. But I think, you know, watching him, he's unstable. I still think the knee is an issue. He's all over the place. His body control, I mean, with that knee, he's just all over the floor. He's all over the place. And I would assume eventually, you know, these dirty plays are going to catch up to him. I just don't understand. I don't understand how that's not a flagrant two. I mean, I don't want to cry about it, but I never expect him to get thrown out of the game. So ultimately, I don't care. I knew it wasn't going to be a flagrant two, but because they're not going to throw him out of that game in that situation, they're just not going to do it, even if he deserves it. But that's some nonsense. Mario in Long Beach, what's up, Mario?
Oh man, C-Mac, how you doing tonight?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. I agree with everything you said. I'm on the same wavelength about Embiid. I mean, even the first one to Hartenstein was dirty. you know, and they didn't even call out.
No, yeah, it was. Listen, it's laughable how dirty he is. Now, listen, we can't. We can cry about it for one evening. I can cry about it now at 2 o'clock in the morning. But ultimately, they got to figure out a way to come back and bring a little bit more of a physical nature to Embiid. No one's looking for injuries. I'm not saying don't dive at his knee because he's dirty to you. No one's saying that. But they got to be a little bit more physical with him. They got to figure out a way to slow him down. They got to make things more difficult for him. I know he's 7'2", shooting threes over people and getting to the foul line and shooting at a 95% clip. But you got to figure out a way to body him up. You got to figure out a way to make things tough on him. And you got to figure out a way to fluster him. And I think they have flustered him. That's why he's getting these flagrants. But like, he was excellent last night.
Oh, without a doubt. But the thing is when he pulled on Robinson, was that when he hurt his ankle again, or he hurt it at another time?
I think he hurt. I don't know if he tweaked it there. Again, I'm watching the game. I'm watching a lot of things. He might have tweaked it there, but he played on from that point. I think he hurt it on a different play.
You know, if the NBA had balls, they would really look at that. He should be suspended for the next game, really, after what he did.
He's not going to be.
I'm just saying he should be. Remember when
it's as dirty a play you can. If it was the other way, Mitchell Robinson would be suspended for pulling
down. He was driving to the basket. His leg came up. It hit the guy in the face. He got a flagrant two. He got thrown out of the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. Like, it was a little while ago.
I don't remember off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, and it wasn't as dirty as that. The play was completely, like you said, he should have been thrown out of the game. It should have never happened. But I'll tell you one thing, C-Mac. He's not going to shoot that good. He's a good shooter. He's not that good.
That third quarter was incredible. You have to give it to
him. Yeah, that's not going to happen again.
They barely hit rim. I mean, they were, whether it was him, Oubre, Payne, you know, who barely played in previous in the series, hit three threes in that third quarter that were deadly. Like, he's just, the role players come out, and we talked about it, the role players are going to be the defining factor, because you know, I mean, 50's a bit much, but you know Maxie and Embiid are going to play well for the most part. I think I think 50's probably the best he'll do this series, but he's going to be himself. And Maxie is going to be fast and get to the basket and hit threes. You know that. It's the role players. And the Knicks have the better role players. But when you get on the road, you know, the home team role players play better. The home team, they're used to their rims. They shoot better. They play better. And we saw that in game three.
Yeah, you know what I would do in the next game? I would use Achiuwa on.
Well, I think they might have to. If Mitchell Robinson can't play, you're going to see more of Achiuwa.
And Achiuwa has a little more speed and stuff like that, so he can get. I think he can stay with him, and he could maybe bother him a little bit.
Well, we'll see. I think you got to throw double teams at him. I think you got to be physical with him. And then even make him play defense, like figure out a way to have to, you know, make him move his feet, be physical with him, go to the basket, you know, make him exert energy and you know, be physical with him.
Right. Do I have time for one more comment about the Giants?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I also agree with what you're saying about Jones, because it's really funny. You know what I did? I did an analogy on Jones versus Tyrod Taylor, right? It was very interesting, because they both have 56 games in their arsenal for as many years as they played. Tyrod Taylor's 28-28. Jones is 22-36, so it's 58 games. 12,000 yards passing each, 62 touchdowns each, but Jones had 42 interceptions and only 29 for Taylor. But Jones had 24 lost fumbles and only 5 for Rudd. And when I looked it up, that's the most lost fumbles since he's in the league. And also, in his 5 years, he only threw 62 touchdown passes. That's the worst in the league for any starter.
No doubt.
I listened to your response. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big Daniel Jones fan. I think he's got tools. And on some level, I do think the Giants haven't given him enough, of course. But, I mean, I just don't know how many years we could do this, and now he's injured, and he doesn't score. And there are other quarterbacks around the league. You want to say that the Giants' weapons are the worst or whatever? I mean, that's fine. Look around the league. I'm sorry. Do you think, like, and I know I use this example a lot, but because it's the young quarterback coming into the league, like C.J. Stroud, do you think if Tank Dell and Nico Collins were with the Giants, we'd be talking about how good they are? And the weapons that Daniel Jones has? We would be talking about the lack of weapons Daniel Jones has. Do you think he would make those players as good as C.J. Stroud made them? Do you? Because I don't. I don't. Because Daniel Jones was unable to make it seem like Hyatt was on the team, and then all of a sudden we're getting Hyatt involved when Tyrod Taylor gets in there. I think he's so afraid of making the mistake. There's a fine line between aggressiveness and you know, avoiding mistakes. And Daniel Jones got to a point where, sure, he limited his turnovers, yeah, and then he never took chances again. And he doesn't throw the ball down the field. We saw it when other quarterbacks came in there. They were able to get the ball down the field a little bit. No one's saying the offense was any great shakes when other quarterbacks were in there, but at least it looked like an offense. Daniel Jones has been brutal, and now he's been injured, right? That's all. And I understand. I don't want them. And like, you can hit me up on Twitter, too, at @CMACWFAN. And this Alex has been hitting me up. You keep saying how much you trust Shane and Dable with QBs, but since they don't agree with you now, they're wrong. Come on, man. Have some faith, like you claim, in Dabes. Yeah, I do have faith in them. And I'm not saying they're wrong. Never said they were wrong. I never said, hey, you have to go draft J.J. McCarthy if he's sitting there. Never said that. I'm just saying a lot of Giant fans are really pumped about Nabers, and I find it hard to be pumped when the quarterback is Daniel Jones. And I understand not reaching for a quarterback. I get it. I get it, and I've been saying that. But I don't believe this is belief in Daniel Jones. I believe this is they tried to go get the quarterback they wanted. And ultimately, what this reminds me of is meaningless wins. I don't want to get back into this conversation, but sorry. Do we look back fondly on beating Green Bay with Tommy DeVito? Was that an important win? Or beating New England? Or some of the other wins that kept them from being higher in this draft to go get a quarterback? This is why I talk about it, because you couldn't move up. Couldn't move up to get their guy. They wanted Drake May. Couldn't get him. And so they took a wide receiver. Hopefully he's a stud. But now the Giants are in a position where I just don't see them winning next year. We'll see. Hopefully I'm wrong. But let's just, like, the scenario plays out for me. Now you've got a better, he's the worst quarterback in the division. Like, I think you'd be hard-pressed right now going around the league. Find a team in the NFL right now who would rather have Daniel Jones than the guy they're playing. Find a team that would trade Daniel Jones for their guy. I don't think there's many. You talk about when you add the contract in, certainly. The injury-prone nature. I really don't think there's a lot of situations right now in the league where you would rather have Daniel Jones than the quarterback they're playing. And right now, with whatever Dak Prescott's limits are, last year it was a conversation that Daniel Jones is better than Dak Prescott. You remember that conversation? And Dak Prescott has limits, don't get me wrong. I understand that. I don't know if he'll ever win a Super Bowl, but who's going to win more games? Who's the better quarterback Sunday to Sunday, please? So you got Dak Prescott. You got now Jaden Daniels in Washington. You got Hurts in Philadelphia. Who's got the worst quarterback in the division? And usually what happens when you have the worst quarterback in the division? You don't win the division. You don't win a lot of games. Especially when you tell me everywhere else there's so many holes with this team. So now you got a team full of holes. You got a quarterback who's the worst in the division. What if they win 5 games? What if they have another disastrous season? Is Joe Shane even here? Is Brian Daboll here? Who's the head coach? How is he at developing quarterbacks? What's the quarterback situation next year? I firmly believe in taking, if you don't have a quarterback, you continue to take shots at getting the quarterback. It's worth it. The risk, the juice is worth the squeeze for the quarterback, because if you're right, it changes everything. And right now, as great as Nabers is, how many wins does he impact next year? How many wins did Garrett Wilson impact for the Jets when Zach Wilson's the quarterback? How many? I don't see them getting any better. until they have a quarterback, this is all just, now it's roster building and okay, but I'm not excited about it. That number, the 6th overall pick, taking a wide receiver doesn't excite me. That's all. It's okay. Hopefully he's good, and hopefully, you know, when they get a good quarterback, he can be a big piece. But until then, I have no faith in this Giant team.